Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. Thanks for coming back. Glad to be back with you. Today is day 22, January 2020, and we're going to be talking about the Course in Miracles workbook lesson number 22. Let's jump right in. What I see is a form of vengeance. What I see is a form of vengeance. Now, over the last two lessons, let's quickly look back and see that on lesson 20 said, I am determined to see. And 21 is, I am determined to see things differently. Today, lesson 22, what I see is a form of vengeance. Today's idea accurately describes the way anyone who holds attack thoughts in his mind must see the world. Having projected his anger onto the world, he sees vengeance about to strike at him. His own attack is thus perceived as self-defense. This becomes an increasingly vicious circle until he is willing to change how he sees. Otherwise, thoughts of attack and counterattack will preoccupy him and people his entire world. What peace of mind is possible to him then? It is from this savage fantasy that you want to escape. It is not joyous news to hear that it is not real. Let me back that up. Is it not joyous news to hear that it is not real? Is it not a happy discovery to find that you can escape? You made what you would destroy. Everything that you hate and would attack and kill. I'm going to read that sentence again. You made what you would destroy, everything that you hate and would attack and kill. All that you fear does not exist. Look at the world about you at least 5 minutes today, for at least a minute each time. As your eyes move slowly from one object to another, from one body to another, say to yourself, I see only the perishable. I see nothing that will last. What I see is not real. What I see is a form of vengeance. At the end of each practice period, ask yourself, in this lesson, what I see is a form of vengeance. What are we seeing? Everywhere we look, we see bodies, we see things, we see form. When he says what you see in this lesson, he's referring to what we see through the eyes of the body, yes, and through the eyes of the personality separated self, the small self, small s self. And that self, as we've discussed in prior lessons, just like the dreams that we had last night, is really seeing images that are projected onto the screen of the mind. They play out as if it's really a kind of like a fantasy, a dream, which is a construct of some drama, some story that unfolds as images play across the screen of our mind, if you will. And it appears that we are a part, a very real part, in form of the dream. Well, yes, of course, we're the central character, but everything that we're seeing and everything we're experiencing in the dream certainly appears to be there. It seems to be separate from us. It seems to be existing on its own, literally, without any participation of ours. We're just really looking in, so to speak, just watching, being the observer. No, of course, we do get involved in conversations and we do get involved in the drama that seems to be playing out, the story that seems to be playing out, and the ultimate decisions that we make in those dreams as we dream at night about what we should do next or what might happen next. And should we defend ourselves, or if somebody is causing us problems, which is frequent, yes, in the drama of our dreams, there at least seems to be some element of something that we need to do, some kind of a doingness. Then it's incumbent upon us to take some kind of an action, to move here, move there, withdraw or advance, whatever the case may be. But what are we seeing in this movie of our mind when we're sleeping at night? I believe we can begin to agree now that that's just a construct of mind that we've created, a dreamscape, I like to call it, that's made out of nothing. It's all illusion. We wake up and go, huh, it was just a dream. And of course, the miracle says two very important things. One, you're always dreaming. And two, dreams have no effect. And as we've talked over these last, first 21 lessons now, 3 weeks of the new year, we talked about that the world, even this daytime or, you know, waking construct of life that we call our reality in form, we're a body, the world is real, it's concrete, and all the evidence that it appears to demonstrate is that that is our reality. We all, I think, know that if we drill down and look close enough at anything that we experience around us in the world of form, that we can see, and ultimately our science confirms, that it's mostly just nothing. It's just the movement of atoms that have collected themselves together through some attractor factor, some form of attraction that pulls them together and literally causes them to be experienceable. But if we really drill down, we can actually see the atomic structure of all form. And we can also see that that atomic structure is mostly space. There's pretty much nothing there. And as we back out away from it now, taking more of a macro view, it looks and appears to be something of solid form, but I think we know, and intuitively, I think we're beginning to grasp, you know, as a, you know, race consciousness, if I can put it that way, that things are not as they appear to be. And we really do have almost, do we, any argument at all that everything in form is temporary, whatever, wherever you are in this now, and whatever you're experiencing right now, bodies or things or anything else, 100 years from now, it will not be in the form that it's presenting in its current expression. I think we can all agree on that. Everything is going to change. It's changing every instant, every passing of the instant of time, in every second, minute, hour, day, week, month, year. And we're just entering a new decade, and my, how things have changed in the last decade, yes? There's no confusion about this. We recognize that nothing is permanent. Nothing is permanent. When I was younger, there was a anecdotal story, and I don't know if it was a movie or some kind of a little TV skits or series or whatever, about these two warring families called the Hatfields and McCoys. And these were families that had been carrying on a battle for generations. And when someone was asking one of the current members of one of the families, one of the leaders of the families, why are you fighting this other family? What, And it was the answer was, we don't really know, but it's just our tradition. It's what we've been told we're supposed to do. Holding a grievance or holding, you know, the energy of vengeance. A vengeance is, if we looked at it, and I didn't look it up this morning, I guess we could look at the definition in the dictionary, but I think we kind of can say pretty well we understand that it's really about trying to get even or to balance the scales or to make things right because somebody has been wronged. And in this case, we could say, because I have been wronged, I have a need, I feel this desire to balance that scale, to make the wrong right, whether it's somebody that's done something against me or some form of governance has done something against me or it's done something against someone that I love and care about. And I'm motivated to take some action, to do some doingness, to be involved in correcting the wrong. It's going on all around us. It is the demonstration of the world. And today in our world, it's called social justice. It's just another name for vengeance. That's all it is. Social justice. Oh, I'm sorry if I'm being politically incorrect, but political correctness in and of itself is someone trying to put a limitation on who you are and how you can express yourself. Make no mistake, there is no limitation placed on you by spirit. There is no judgment in spirit. Judgment is only derived from the mind of the separated egoic self. Social justice is another term for vengeance. It just sounds so much nicer. I really would like to have social justice to right the wrongs. That's vengeance, clear and simple. It's holding a grievance, clear and simple. And those are the locks to the imprisonment of our mind. Those are the locks and the shackles to the slavery of illusion. And we are, as I was sharing with you earlier this week, absolutely hypnotized by these thoughts of fear, these thoughts of grievance, these thoughts of vengeance, whether we call it social justice or any other really nice name, it's still the same thing. Somebody's been treated wrong. Somebody is a victim, has been victimized, whether it's me or someone else, and something needs to be done about it. Well, I'm here to share this morning that God created you perfect. Neither behind the point of perfection nor advancing toward it. God also created everyone else that you've ever seen, met, connected with, or not connected with. All of God's children, that's me and you, all of God's children were created equally, perfectly, invulnerable, eternal. There is no such word as victim. It's not possible. I know that's a tough one because we can look around and we see a reason for social justice. We see a reason for vengeance. We see a reason to have a grievance with somebody. And we have those and hold those with people all around us on small levels and big levels. Small levels being these little picadillos that we have with people around us, and we want things a certain way or we want to be treated a certain way. And on the bigger scale, it's when we begin to get other people to agree with our positionality that something is wrong. And it can go on in every social structure, and it does go on in every social structure because those social structures are founded on the principle of an idea that something needs to be done. We could say it another way. Well, God's asleep at the wheel. God's not taking care of it, so we should. And who are we being? Oh, we're playing God. Of course we are. We're playing God. Are we allowing and accepting things to be just as they are? Not if we believe in social justice and that something needs to be done. Not if we believe that God created victims, which is a lie. God didn't create victims. God didn't even create bodies. You created that construct, and you're experiencing your belief about it. Good or bad? Wrong or right? And on the grand scale, look at our country now, our political rock-throwing contest that's literally going on today. Today is January 22nd, and it's gotten to the point where now, and it's all on public display, where our governance system, our House and our Senate, if you will, of our political structure, of the United States of America, these people are at such odds with each other, and there's been such slander and hatred and holding such vengeance for each other that our entire governmental system is literally practically at a standstill. They're not, in my humble review, they've lost sight of their purpose. Their purpose is to represent us as a country of individuals who are here to work together as those individuals to love and care and support each other in supporting a life, economic life, and a life of governance where we feel comfortable, where our needs are met, and where we are all able to exercise our free will, as long as we're not harming someone else. Vengeance and grievances taken to such a high level where millions of people are lined up on each side against each other is a display of a grand rock-throwing contest. So how do we avoid it? How do we escape it? Where do we find peace in all of this? Well, part of it is to realize a few of the foundational principles that we've already discussed are available to us to consider. One, we're always dreaming. Two, dreams have no effect. And as he says in this lesson today, that it is from the savage fantasy that you want to escape. It is not joyous. Is it not joyous news to hear that it is not real? Today's idea accurately describes the way anyone who holds attack thoughts in his mind must see the world, because we projected our anger onto the world and we see vengeance about to strike at us. And there you have it. If it's not real, we can dismiss it. If I hold out both of my hands and I say, okay, I'm going to pretend that there's an orange in one hand and there's an apple in the other hand, which one's most important? It doesn't really matter, does it? Because they're both illusions. They're just images in my mind. I can close my eyes and see the images in my mind, and I can see me holding an apple in one hand and an orange in the other hand, and it doesn't really matter which one I prefer, because in truth, they're both illusions. We're always and constantly making decisions and saying how important it is, these very, very important decisions, and we're making decisions between illusions. And there's only one decision to make, and that is to rise above the battlefield. to get out of the middle of the rock throwing contest, we just need to leave the battlefield, because if there's no one there to fight with, the war ends. The battle is over. But we have to withdraw our attention, our energy, our consciousness from that field of vengeance and grievances and disagreements and positionalities. And we have to connect with our higher self through the practice that's shared with us here in A Course in Miracles, which is to simply become present. Take a good deep breath. All is well. What we cannot see, what the world cannot see, and what is not available to us to even begin to recognize, is that all of these things are moving us towards a shift of consciousness that is profoundly, profoundly changing our world. And we're looking at these tired old displays of vengeance and grievances and hatred and disagreement, and we're beginning to say, I'm withdrawing from the battle. This is just useless. And it just continues to repeat again and again because we keep giving it our attention. As he says, otherwise, thoughts of attack and counterattack will preoccupy us and people our entire world. What are we seeing? What are we seeing? We're seeing what's played out onto the world is reflecting back our own consciousness. Well, what can I do? What can I do? I want things to be better, and I want to give this person my support or that person my support or whatever. Or maybe I want to share my voice against something that I think is wrong or right or whatever. Well, I've got some bad news. We don't know what's wrong or right. I've shared with you before, I could try my best to teach my cat to drive my car, but it's never going to figure it out. It's never going to be able to do it. It's never going to be able to have even the conversation with me about how the engine works and how the engine starts. And it's just miracle after miracle. It gets to ride in the car and I push a button and suddenly we're going down the street. Has no concept of even what the button is doing. But you do. You have some awareness, but that poor cat, it can never conceive of the intricacies of the systems that are involved in that simple process of getting in a car and driving down the street. The cat cannot drive the car. And this ego mind that we put so much confidence in, that we give so much of our awareness and attention to, and that we make such claims of I know, and I know this is wrong, and I know that is right, and blah, blah, blah. That mind has no concept of wrong or right. It has no concept of social justice. It only has a position of a vengeance. It is only supporting the concept of a vision of illusions as real and a positionality about those illusions of being of importance. Those constructs consume us. Those positionalities take us to the battlefield. What can we do? Take a good deep breath. We can take a good deep breath. We can let it all go. We can connect with our higher self, this voice within us, and ask one simple question. What is the truth? Because the truth is, I don't know. So what is the truth? How can I be the expression of love in this moment, in this situation, with these people, in this circumstance, wherever I'm at, whatever the situation may be, turn within and simply ask that question. What is the truth? And in what way can I be the expression of love? Joined with that voice, with that knowingness, with the voice of certainty, the capital V voice for God, the capital T teacher, capital F friend, capital G God, joined in mind, in dialogue, connected in unity and union with that self that is your true self. We could call it and do call it in A Course in Miracles the Holy Spirit. but it's still nothing more than your right mind. That is the mind of knowing. And as I said earlier, there is no judgment in spirit. It is not judging. You might know and hear a simple phrase that comes to me often these days, and it's just simply saying, that doesn't matter. But regardless what you might be hearing, I promise you, if you're connected with spirit, what you are connected with is the knowing of how to be loving in each moment, the knowing of how to be certain of your actions in each moment, because you're no longer acting alone. You're no longer a separated self. You're joined in union and communion with your right mind, the spirit of love. And whatever action or lack of action that you may feel compelled to do, joined with that mind, is always going to be the highest and best for everyone. It's always going to be an act of integrity. And by the world standard, it may look like you're not being a nice person, because it might require you to stand up and say, no more. I'm not participating. I'm withdrawing myself from this battlefield. I'm laying down the rocks. I'm not tossing any more rocks at anybody else. I'm done. The hardest part of this practice is the part where we actually ask the question, and it's not asking the question that's the hard part. What follows after asking the question is listening and following that guidance. And that's the hard part. The hard part is to be quiet. The hard part is to not fill in the blanks of what should be done and how to do it. The hard part is not to say, well, I need to take some action, because we're still holding on to some form of vengeance. And how do we know we're still holding on to some form of vengeance? What I see is a form of vengeance. Everything I'm looking out upon the world with the body's eyes is manifesting as some form of vengeance, because it's all manifesting in a temporal way to show me thoughts that I've had of attack or defense. An attack is a defense, and defense is necessary when we feel afraid. So it all boils down to simple construct of a thought system based in fear. It's so simple, we don't want to accept it. Well, I'm not really. I've heard people say, well, I'm not afraid of anything. Really? As soon as someone tells me that, I know that they're just like probably really in a state of fear. So much that they have to actually literally deny it. Well, I tell you what, my brothers and sisters, let's join back again tomorrow for lesson 23. I love you. God bless you. And I'll see you then.
Forgive us our illusions, Father, and help us to accept our true relationship with you, in which there are no illusions, and where none can ever enter. Our holiness is yours. What can there be in us that needs forgiveness when yours is perfect? The sleep of forgetfulness is only the unwillingness to remember your forgiveness and your love. Let us not wander to temptation, for the temptation of the Son of God is not your will. And let us receive only what you have given, and accept but this into the minds which you created and which you love. Amen.
send my love.